everyone. This is Yvette Hampton. Welcome back to the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast. I am back today with Hillary Morgan Ferrer from Mama Bear Apologetics and Abby Ranella. I'm going to give your full name this time, Abby, just saying Avanella. Abby Ranella, who is my co-host, sidekick, partner in crime, all the things. I love doing this ministry with you, Abby. And this is so fun. Like I said, on Monday's episode, if you guys missed that episode, go back and listen to it. This is an episode we've been talking about, praying about for a really long time. And so we're thrilled to have Hillary back with us today. And we're talking about sexuality. We're talking about how to prepare our kids for this crazy world and prepare ourselves to be able to help our kids understand sexuality from a biblical perspective and teach that to them. And as we've got Pride Month coming up, you know, the month of June, you go into the mall, you go into stores anywhere, and you see rainbows everywhere, and it's just like, couldn't they pick a different thing? You know, I just think that's such a slap in the face of God. It really is so frustrating. But that's what we see. And so we have to be able to talk with our kids about these things from a biblical worldview. And so Hillary is here to help us know how to do that. But before we get back into our conversation, I want to say thank you again to our sponsor, BJU Press Homeschool. If you're looking for a great homeschool curriculum for any age, any grade, any subject, check them out at bjupresshomeschool.com, and they will be with you every step of the way. They are so great. They will encourage a love for learning and help your children to develop a strong biblical worldview, which is part of what we're doing today. And they have resources for everything that you're trying to do with your kids. If it's parent-led, if it's video-led, whatever approach is best for you and your family, they've got something for you. So check them out at bjupresshomeschool.com. Well, Abby and Hillary, welcome back to the podcast. It is so great to have you back with us again. We kind of left Monday's episode off with talking about love and, you know, how do we deal with loving the person who is dealing with homosexuality or transgenderism, whatever it is that they're struggling with. And so I want to talk about love right now, because
love is love, and love means accepting all the sin that there is to accept, right? But like God's love, like the definition, right, of actual love.
Right. And that's a good point, Abby, because it comes from two different perspectives, right? We've mm-hmm. got like, how do we speak to them in love? How do we love these people? But then on the other hand, we've got people saying, well, love is love. It doesn't matter who you are or who you love, because God is a God of love. And so like, there's just so many things being thrown at us. So Hillary, help us.
Yeah. So this is one of those questions that I get from parents, especially from teenagers, that say, I have a friend who has come out to me, and what do I do? I'm not sure what to do with this. And so one of the things that I remind them is that they have been told a lot of times within the LGBTQ+ community that their family or other Christians are going to reject them. So first off, we need to make sure that we are not doing the rejecting. Yeah. And so there's a lot of things you can do with your friends who have different beliefs than you do. And so this is one of the first things where sometimes just saying the obvious, like basically calling out the elephant in the room clarity is kindness. So it's like, this is where you can say, hey, I know that, you know, you believe this, you believe that this is okay, and I'm probably not going to change your mind. I'm guessing that you're going to tell me I can't change your mind. You're not going to change my mind in terms of believing that this is what the Bible teaches. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to take it on to someone say, well, what do you believe? You say, well, according to the Bible.
Right.
Put the onus back on the Bible, not on the fact right. that, oh, I love believing this. Because right. there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that I would prefer to not have to, you know, not to have to pay attention to. But I do believe this is what the Bible teaches. You're probably not going to change my mind. Do you think it's okay if we can still remain in relationship knowing I'm not going to change mm-hmm. your mind and you're not going to change mine? And then if they say, oh, yeah, sure, that's fine. Well, I mean, at that point, then the elephant's kind of out of the room. It deflates the situation a lot. And so at that point, yeah, sure, go to football games, sit together at lunch, invite them over to your house. There's going to be certain places where you have to put limits, maybe on certain movies that you're going to. There was a guy that I knew in college that he thought, in order to love, he had a real heart for the homosexual community. So he thought going to the gay bar with them was okay. I was like, that might be a little, that's the difference between participating in versus loving right. the person. You don't participate in the things that you think God has called sin, but at the same time, you maintain that relationship. And part of maintaining that relationship is giving them the opportunity to reject you. So when you ask them, is it okay if we still maintain this relationship, even though I'm not going to change your mind and you're not going to change mine? There's a possibility that they could say no, no. If you don't accept this about me, you don't accept me. And that's when you can say, no, I really do. I love you and I accept you, but I don't accept that this is God's best for you. So if they say, nope, no relationship there, you say, well, can I maybe come back in about 6 months and see if you still feel the same way? And then follow through, come back with them in about 6 months and just say, hey, I've really missed you. I've really missed hanging out. I've missed our times together. And again, I'm not going to probably change your mind. And I know you're not going to change mine. Can we please still be in relationship? And at that point, if they say absolutely not, you've kind of done as far as it depends on you to live at peace with all people. And at that point, they can't say that you rejected them because you tried a couple different times to maintain that relationship. If someone's doing the rejecting, it's the other person doing the rejecting.
Yeah.
I have a big question that I've been dying to ask you. So I guess my question is, and then I'll give you a little story to say why I have this question. When is too soon to talk about this stuff? Because I remember when I had a six-year-old and never in my life, never in a million prayers would I ask to have to speak about what is homosexuality with a six-year-old. Yeah. Never. Like, I would never want to expose my six-year-old to that. Yeah. However, we drove to the big city, which is a couple hours away, when they were six, and they literally saw two girls kissing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just once, it was over and over. It was like everywhere there. Yeah. And I realized, you know what? That option of when just got taken from me. The world just put it in my hand. And now I am talking about that. Well, I had shared that with one of my amazing godly mentors who is a much older woman. And she said to me, I can't believe, like, there is no way you should be talking about that kind of stuff with a six-year-old. And I said, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
the I would love to not have to have that conversation, but the world just... The world just stepped in front, and I had to step in front of the world. And so, which she doesn't understand, because when her kids were six, there was no, that didn't exist. They didn't, well, it existed, but they didn't see it front and center.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is parents that have little kids right now today, when this is everywhere on every, you can't go through the grocery store, honestly, without seeing something.
Yeah.
When in your, you know, with everything you know about this, and when is too soon?
Well, I mean, if they don't understand language, if they don't understand relationships, like I think of one of my little nephews, I can't remember how he was somewhere between 4 and 6, but he was confident that he wanted to marry my mom. He wanted to marry Ruru, his grandmother. So it's like, they don't even know what that kind of relationship is to begin with. And so a lot of times you don't necessarily have to explain all these things, but also be looking at what do they understand? Because there's going to be some kids who at six years old are completely oblivious. Some kids that are at 10 are still completely oblivious. And other kids that are 5 that totally see something. And they're like, you see the wheels start moving. So like, number one, know your kid. Number two, just ask them, what have you seen? What you've heard? Try to assess what they already know. Because one of the main principles we want to remember, and this is something that my pastor's wife used to say all the time. She would say, I do not want my kids hearing about anything that they haven't heard in my kitchen first. Because, and even though she didn't have a name for this, there's actually, as far as there's got to be a name for this. I don't know what it is. I called it the founder's effect. I don't know what it's actually called. Where the first person to address a topic with you becomes the person who you see as the expert on that topic.
Yeah.
So to this day, I remember the first time I was introduced to something called intelligent design within biology. And I will remember that one lecture over all the intelligent design training I've ever gotten, because that was the first time. And I know who it was that talked about it, what he was talking about, because it's burned in my head like that. You don't want Dr. Google. You don't want an ad on TV. You don't want Target. You don't want any of anybody else to become the expert in your child's mind. And so, but again, you don't have to just shove them into all of it. You start asking them, what are your friends saying? What are you noticing? Assess where they are. And then you can talk about relationships and, you know, the difference between friendship relationships versus the kind of relationship that mommy and daddy have. You don't have to go into all the details, but you can establish there are different types of love. And that actually goes along with our love conversation. We have both a podcast and a blog, I think, on the different types of love. We did that for Valentine's Day this year to help establish that there's different types of love. And so you can help them start recognizing in their cartoons and in their shows, these different types of love. So when they see an Eros kind of love between two girls, You can say, yep, that's something that the Bible does not sanction. It's not something that the Bible teaches.
So love isn't love? there's multiple kinds of love.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's really interesting what is permitted within certain languages. Like I was talking to my old editor about how in French, the concept of home, they don't have a word for like home, like that place that you belong. And then there's other languages where they have multiple words for different concepts. And it's like, sometimes we're actually limited by what language we speak. So, you know, something like Greek has like 8 different definitions of love versus we've got like and love and that's about it. Or, you know, we've got adore, but they all kind of mean the same thing. So it's just a limitation of language for us.
Have you tried CTC math yet with your child? Here's a testimonial from another happy homeschool mom. Amber said, "I'm absolutely thrilled with CTC math. It's a rare find that I've used with my children for more than 5 years now. I have 6 children using CTC math, and each child has found it easy to navigate and very applicable. Thank you so much for all that you are doing in providing quality math lessons for my children." If you're looking for a great online math program, visit ctcmath.com. That's ctcmath.com.
Are you looking for a homeschool curriculum that goes beyond textbooks and truly engages your children in the joy of learning? Apologia's award-winning curriculum is written by homeschool parents to specifically meet your needs and captivate your students with hands-on activities and experiments that make learning unforgettable. With an easy-to-follow, open-and-go format, Apologia takes the stress out of planning and provides a simple roadmap that can easily be tailored to your family's needs. Explore live classes or self-paced courses designed to accommodate every student's unique learning style. Elevate your child's education, spark their curiosity, and nurture a lifelong love for learning with Apologia. Discover Apologia today at apologia.com.
We are back with Hillary and Abby, and this is such a good conversation. You know, Abby, you told the story about how you're when you had one child who was 6 and they saw something that you wished they hadn't seen, and then you were all of a sudden put in a position where, oh my goodness, now I have to explain this to my kids. So Hillary, let me ask you this. How do we prepare our kids before? I mean, my kids are, you know, 13 and 18, so we're far beyond this. But for the mom who's listening or the dad who's listening to this, and they've got little ones and they've not yet maybe encountered this, or again, we've got Pride Month coming up and maybe they're going to be in a store and they're going to see something that you don't want them to see. How can we prepare our kids before actually being exposed to what they're going to be exposed to? How do we prepare them beforehand?
So one of the things we talked about earlier is how in past generations, we had a tendency to other certain types of sins. Oh, that's a sin that other people do. And so we want to make sure that we're guarding against that and know that we are all equal at the foot of the cross. So I take it through several different stages. And this can start with kids as young as like 2, as long as they can start to understand different categories. But the first category we want to cement in their heads is things that are made in the image of God. And I say things because we're going to play is, you know, we know that the only thing made in the image of God are humans. So it's actually going to be a who. Yeah. But kids can get kind of confused about, well, which kind of humans? So you can ask, you know, what about that man over there? Is he made in the image of God? Yes. What about that puppy down there? Nope, adorable as he is, not made in the image of God. What about that flower over there? Beautiful, but not made in the image of God. What about that homeless man in a wheelchair? And yes, still made in the image of God. What about that man dressed like a clown? And you'd be surprised. Some kids are like, well, God's not a clown, so can he be made? So you're establishing this no matter how they appear, no matter how differently abled they are, no matter what color they are, no matter what their hair looks like, no matter if they're like even in their right mind or not, they are all made in the image of God. What about that pregnant woman over there? Yes, made in the image of God. What about the baby inside of her? Yes, made in the image of God. And so once you get this idea of, you know, grass, trees, puppies, kittens, otters, all those adorable things, cute as they are, not made in the image of God. Then we say, and how do we treat people made in the image of God? Well, with dignity and respect, you know, with kindness. And so we are establishing made in the image of God. This is how we treat them. And now we're going to move to the next step of being made in the image of God. And this is where it's a little more difficult to actions that reflect the image of God, actions that reflect God's image. So you can say, you know, that man, when he cussed us out on the highway, was he reflecting God's image? No, he was not. What about the kids that when they were in a fight and punching each other? Nope, that wasn't reflecting God's image. What about mommy when she yelled at you when she was impatient? I'm so sorry. Mommy was not reflecting God's image there. What about you when you disobeyed? Was that reflecting God's image? No, that wasn't. What we're doing is we're establishing that all humans are made in the image of God, and every single human themselves, mommy, daddy, brother, sister, people out there, everybody has ways that they don't reflect God's image. So again, we're keeping this all on equal footing. So now once we get to the point of, well, we're dealing with different sexualities, we're dealing with transgenderism, we can say, are they made in the image of God? They've been trained. Yes, they're made in the image of God. How do we treat people made in the image of God? With dignity, respect, with kindness. Are they choosing to behave in a way that reflects God's image? No. Are there ways that you don't reflect God's image? Yes. So again, we've now put them on equal par. It's not an other than sin. And at that point, it's a lot less scary to try to explain, because then now it's just yet another way that someone doesn't reflect God's image, because we all have that. It's called sin.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is so good.
It is. It's so interesting because we've talked about redefining words, and I think our culture clearly has redefined all of these things, including what the image of God looks like, right? Mm-hmm,
right.
Even though they don't say that. Like if you go into a public school classroom, they're not going to say, well, let's talk about how you are made or not made in the image of God. Mm-hmm. But they are literally redefining the thing that God made.
Yeah.
And that's one, you know, I mean, obviously this is a homeschool podcast. And so I think that's one of the greatest advantages of homeschooling is that we're not putting our kids in a classroom that is teaching them everything contrary to the word of God, right? We get to teach them truth. But let's talk just for a minute. We have a few minutes left in this episode. I want to talk about school, because there are people listening to this who actually still have their kids in school. Mm-hmm. Or maybe their kids are in Sunday school or in a youth group that is not really solid. And I think that I'm seeing a lot of this come into the church as well, where the church doesn't know what they believe. They're missing something as well. And so kids, whether they're homeschooled or not, are still being exposed to this sinful ideology, this ideology that is completely not from the Lord. So let's talk for a second about what we're seeing in the schools, what we're seeing in the church, and what is the church missing? What are schools missing when it comes to teaching sexuality and teaching kids that they are made in the image of God?
Yeah. So I think a lot of times in terms of sexuality, one of the reasons that one of the things they're not teaching is like the meaning behind sexuality. So one of the things that we say in the book is that the act of sex is basically a married couple repeating their marital vows in bodily form. In fact, this is one of the things I encourage parents that when you want to talk about sex with your kids, but they're little too little to understand all the mechanics.
Yeah.
You say sex is something that a husband and wife do, that basically they do it in private, and it's a repeating of their marital vows in bodily form. Hey, let's show you what that's kind of like, in the sense of let's create a special handshake and let's make a promise. Okay, my promise is, as long as I'm alive, I will always love you. And then after that, you do your special handshake every time. Maybe y'all have just gotten in a little fight and you're like, handshake, you know, I will always love you, I'll always forgive you. And you remind them, we're pointing back to a promise that was already made. That is what sexuality is doing. And I think a lot of people just have taken it out of the realm of pointing back to a promise. And again, this goes back even to looking at covenant renewal ceremonies that they had in the ancient times, where it was called a suzerain treaty of what one party was going to do to protect and what the other party was going to do in order to, you know, submit to that protection. It's this beautiful, beautiful picture. But again, it's done within the context of marriage. And so that's kind of helping kids to understand the why behind why do we save this for marriage, I think is one of the number one things that the church has missed along the way.
Yeah, so good. Okay, so Hillary, if you were in jumping on with Yvette's previous question, if you were to be in front of a group of church leaders, what would you say to church leaders on how, I mean, I understand that it is not a church's job to teach any children about sexuality. Like we're not going there. It is a parent's job, but it is a church's job to come alongside of and equip and help parents to do this. Mm-hmm. But as far as church leaders, helping their church body to navigate all of this that's going on in our culture, all of this just chaos all ultimately. And really the enemy stealing and twisting and I mean, twisting so much what God has created. Yeah. What would you say? What would be a great pointer? Because so many just want to bury their heads in the sand because it's hard. It's scary. It is something that is so foreign to so many of the older leaders of the church. Cause like this came on hot and fast, right?
Yeah.
So how would we help our church leaders in helping the church body in this situation?
I think really going back to borrow a phrase from Tim Keller, the meaning of marriage, the meaning of sex, and it's beyond just something like people even say it's the body's way of expressing I love you. Well, you can express I love you with lots of different people. Again, we haven't really made people understand what a covenant is and therefore what a covenant renewal is. On this deep theology of the body and the meaning of gender and the meaning of a sexed body. And by sexed body, we mean sexually dimorphic, which means, you know, the two sexes and the gender look very, very different. Because there's some species where they really don't look that different. Penguins, they have a hard time telling what's going on. You know, rabbits, they can't always tell. Humans, you can absolutely tell. What does that mean? So just kind of giving that meaning and the theology behind it. And then pointing back to its importance. So one of the things that I also did with a group of kids, and basically they solved all the world's problems in this one question, is I had them get into groups and discuss, tell me all the problems that would be decreased in our society if people limited their sexual experiences between husband and wife, and go. And I mean, they were able to be like, well, I guess, you know, the divorces would be down because we wouldn't have all this adultery. We wouldn't have all these out of wedlock pregnancies. The abortion would go down. And if we don't have as many single moms, well, then, you know, that poverty rate's going to go down. If male and female have to be together, you're going to have intact families. And basically they trickled it all the way down to economic policies. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of it, I was like, great. Now we don't have to go into all the practical reasons why this is a good design. They were able to figure out for themselves and then take them into the kind of theological aspects that they may not be able to grapple with on their own. Because if you are a church leader, this is part of your job.
Wow.
Is to understand the deeper things of God and to be able to answer the why, not just the what. Because anyone who can read can answer the what. We need to know the why. And that's where, well, I hope that you're putting the time in to really study that, so that people cannot just regurgitate, but can understand.
So good.
Why God has said what he said. And as you do that, I just find when you understand, things become more and more beautiful. As I was doing my master's in biology, God just got more and more beautiful by understanding this amazing design of just everything that he's created. So I would that's what I would recommend.
Yeah. And ultimately, you know, I see churches do two things. They're either burying their heads or they are just, you know, bad, bad, stay away, stay away, stay away. And all these teens are going up going bad, bad, stay away, stay away. But what
you're saying
is— Or
they're going total affirming to where they're like, we don't know. So just let everybody like Jesus did. And that's all we can say to that.
But what you're saying is we need to understand the heart of God. We need to understand the heart of God and his design. And ultimately it's for our good and for his glory because he loves us.
Yeah. It's as if he knew what he was doing from the very beginning of time.
Mind blown.
Imagine that.
Like
imagine
I say, having chapter a perfect three, plan. A really great design when followed.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, man. That's such a great way to look at it. And I desperately wish that we saw life that way, that we saw marriage the way that God intended for it to be. And, you know, we have heaven to look forward to on the other side of this. And it's all going to be beautiful all over again. So, but we're out of time. We're going to come back and talk about a whole lot more of this tomorrow. Hillary, thank you again for being with us. Tell us one more time where people can find out about Mama Bear Apologetics.
Yep. So Mama Bear Apologetics, M-A-M-A Bear Apologetics.com. You can go there. We have podcasts, we have articles and blogs, and we have free resources for anything from, you know, the guide to Easter, guide to Christmas that come out kind of seasonally. So you can go to any kind of bookstore. All the Christian books have our books. Amazon has all our books. And so find us there as well.
Sounds great. And they have a great blog. It is called, I think you mentioned this earlier, Prepping Your Kids for Pride Month. Mm-hmm. We will put links to that in the show notes so you guys can go back and find that. But we will be back tomorrow to talk more about it. Thank you guys for listening so much. We are so grateful for you. If there's a way that we can be praying for you, please send us an email at podcast@schoolhouserocked.com. And we do our very best to respond to those as quickly as possible. If you've not left a review for the podcast, would you please take just a minute to leave a review and let other people know why they should listen to this podcast as well. Stay tuned to the very end to hear what's coming up next. And we will see you back here tomorrow. Bye.
Hold up.
This brings up a concept that we talk about in here, and it's the power of repetition normalization. So the more someone sees something, the more someone hears something, the more true it seems. That's why we get stuff like old wives' tales that have been repeated so many times that everybody assumes that it's true. Advertisers know this. They know that they don't have to prove to you that their brand is the best brand. If they can get just they can just get your brand, their brand in front of your eyes more, then you're automatically going to gravitate towards it. And so we need to be presenting that truth to them every time we see that lie. Yes. And every time you see them rolling their eyes in their head like, oh, I know you've said this so many times, that is a sign that you are doing your job correctly.